Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bob Thune, and I'm here with my friend Johan Richter. I tried.
Actually, you got a 7 out of 10 the previous time. That was a 6 out of 10. That was actually worse.
Man, I'm going backwards.
It's okay. There's grace.
You say your name for listeners now.
It's letter U, number one. Johan Richter.
There you go. It's the Verster. All the very Dutch and German sounds that I just can't do right. If you listened last week, you heard the beginning of his story, the sort of journey of his coming to faith. If you didn't listen to that, I want to encourage you to go back and catch that, because what we want to do in this episode is continue to hear the progress of this story. So Johan is a church planter and pastor in Pretoria, South Africa. And in the last episode, you told us your story of coming to faith at 24 in London, the shaping experiences you had in those early years of sort of discipleship and formation and ministry. And you sort of got us to roughly the starting of Lichtpunt in 2010. But what I wanted to do, though, is to back up and ask, okay, but as all that was happening in your life, a lot was going on in South Africa, right? Because 94 is when Mandela comes. Is that 94? Yeah. He becomes president. So in the late 90s, a lot is changing in the cultural structure of South Africa. So probably the world you grew up in, the world you went back to plant, were a little bit different. Or I'd like to hear, what was the same and what felt different from the time you went to London and came back?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like you say, 1994 was what is called the dawning of the new South Africa, the beginning of what is often called the Rainbow Nation. So the apartheid governments and all of that was ended, and it was a miraculous few years from the beginning 90s to 95, let's say, for in the country of South Africa. Many people will look back even to this day from all the different cultural groups and say that there's many miracles that happened there. It could so easily have ended up like a Rwanda, you know, like a kind of a big internal civil war, genocide, or whatever. It could have, and it didn't. So in that landscape, so because just to connect sort of the political history of the country, of course, the cultural group that I come from, Afrikaans people, were of course really in power. You know, in the apartheid government, it was really the Afrikaans people that were sort of the leaders of the old South Africa. And from 1994 especially, it had a huge significant effect on a cultural Christian people, faith-wise. The start of the new South Africa actually had a massive effect for many Afrikaans-speaking people. And I'm starting there because that was honestly part of the thinking behind planting Lichtpunt. And so I'm glad you raised the question or the topic is that lots of Afrikaans people grew up. You must imagine it is exactly the same, not slightly the same. It's exactly the same. If you know anything about the German National Church during the Second World War under Hitler, and the German National Church, often from the pulpit, forgetting their prophetic calling as the church and really becoming the voice for the government, you know, and really just saying exactly and finding very clever theological ways from the Bible to say, thus is the Lord, obey your government and this and this and that. Now, that would exactly what in a sense happened in the Second World War with Germany was often happening through the state church, which was Afrikaans church, during the apartheid years. When 1994 happened, of course, everything was changed. And as everything changed, also so many of the Afrikaans traditional churches overnight changed their tune, their theological convictions. All of a sudden, you know, they were reading the Bible in a slightly different way. and that had an effect also on the psyche and the spiritual the spiritual confidence, I would say. That's not a great word, but for many Afrikaans speaking people, and it affects in sort of three circles. There were sort of three extremes within the group of people that I sort of grew up the way I came from, and that is that the church especially of Afrikaans church, either went very liberal, extremely liberal, even more so than many of the church was already going liberal, because it was just, well, because it was almost becoming more of a social gospel. And in the new South Africa, that was, that in a sense was accentuated. So there was a strengthening of sort of the liberal church within in the country. On the other hand, there was other guys bunkering down even more so, getting more conservative, you know. And not, I'm not talking conservative politically, but even saying, listen, what we need is just more reform in the sense of let's go, yeah, more conservative in the way that we do things and how we, and it became very structured and fixed and serious. And so more liberal or more conservative, and especially after 1994, lots of Afrikaans churches went way more charismatic, because many of the guys that did love Jesus was disillusioned with the state church pre-1994. Then after that said, well, the place where it feels to us like there's true life and vitality is the charismatic church. They weren't necessarily all theologically convinced of charismatic doctrine, but it was the place where it felt like Jesus is alive.
Yeah.
And so in those three sort of movements of church going to certain extremes, there was a void we felt. And when we were in the UK, it felt to us, but no, there's other options out there. There's other option out there that we believe is vibrant and life-giving, and Jesus is real, but it was more evangelical. I don't know. I know that even the word evangelical in American or British context is not used in exactly the same way. But in the UK, at least, you know, what would be meant by evangelical is we believe in the infallibility of the Bible. The Bible is God's word, and the evangel is central to our understanding of the Bible. The gospel, Jesus, and everything that his person and his work and past, present, and future is the way to make sense of the life. That's what non-Christians need. That's what Christians need. It's what often is called today now gospel-centeredness. And that was something that we, especially growing up in a sense post-1994, and that extreme of Christian sort of experience or understanding of what church life is, this was something totally different. It didn't fit one of those boxes. And it felt like it was a helpful corrective for all three of the extremes. And that's what many of us tasted, and many of the other people in the South Africans tasted. And that then was the driving desire. That's why we wanted to go back to Pretoria also, feeling that we have good news, that that was busy changing our lives, and we had to share that with others. That was it.
So you did seminary in Cape Town. You're flying up to Pretoria on breaks, gathering a core team. 2010, you launched this church. You said with 27 people.
Yeah,
your April. Mom,
my mom, and Toby's mom. Yeah.
Two of them were your mom, and then 25 other people. Talk about just the sort of like the story of how that went from 25 people to what it is today.
Yeah, so one of the things that was slightly unique about what we did, both myself and then the other initial elder to the church, the other pastor to the church, his name is Toby, we co-planted the church. And the reason why I say that is there was a blessing to that, because it meant that as young church plants, we could tag team.
Yeah.
You could just do so much more having two guys right from the beginning, in the sense that we could one guy can work on the sermon and do the Bible study notes and do this and that, and the other guy can try and do other things. And so right from the beginning, we were both young, energetic, overly ambitious sort of personalities. And so we realized that for what we wanted to do will need partnership right from the beginning. And so we both partnered right from the beginning with different international organizations, be that in America or in the UK especially. But even locally, we spent a lot of time having coffees with every single pastor we could almost in Pretoria, getting to know people, trying to build relationships. And right from the beginning, trying to both do these three things that we experience in London. Preach the, be a word-centered church, both in preaching but in also gathering around God's word, really emphasizing community, family, and all the implications of that. And then thirdly, from the beginning, try to plant churches. And so straight away we started, I think we were 6 months into the church plant, and we started another ministry called Transmission, which was really geared to draw in possible other young men who are either interested in church, working for a church, so doing an internship, or other guys who are, or maybe have already gone to seminary, but they want to go deeper theologically and also thinking through what it means in the world of church planting. And so we straight away started that, and in the beginning years at three guys and then five guys, and that's grown over the last 14, 13 years now. We still go on with that ministry, and the aim with that was to get to know others, in a sense, see who's other good guys that we can pull in. We pulled some of those guys into our church right from the beginning for church plant internships. As we were still figuring it out, we started having other guys joining us, and they were doing internships for 2 years with us. They were in a sense 4 years behind where we were in the process. And so we were sort of telling to them, well, this is what we're trying to do, and some of these things might help you. We try to help raise funds for some of those guys, and they then eventually went and planted churches, some of them. And so over the years, the Lord was gracious, and Lichpin itself started growing and was growing, and our gospel communities, I think that's the language that you use, started growing increasingly. And that's in a sense one story of what we were busy with, and then on the other hand, trying to help other small church plants, specifically in our in Pretoria or the greater region, which is called Gauteng, so it's Pretoria/Johannesburg, trying to help a few other churches there to get going.
So, you know, that's an example. The Gauteng, the beginning G is a very German-sounding G, but the ending G is just very normal.
I know,
How am I supposed to know that?
It's like, this is high-grade English.
We Americans don't do this well.
Gauteng. Yeah. You're right. There's inconsistency there. I apologize.
No, it's okay. It's just I'm trying to learn how to speak the language that I don't speak. One of the things you guys have done really intentionally is you've sent out majority culture church plants, but also minority culture leaders and church plants. And so what I'm intrigued by with what you've done is you've sort of tried to be very thoughtful in how you in the leaders you've raised up in this sort of different kind of subcultures or cultures within the culture of South Africa that you're trying to reach.
Yeah, and that's that might be a longer conversation, and you can decide what sort of detours you want to go in on. There's a sense in which there was nothing there that we try to mastermind in any specific way. It was in a sense partly who the Lord brought over our paths, in a sense responding to that. The both the passion and the burden and what those guys felt as their calling. So it wasn't sort of we trying to necessarily do anything. Some of those guys really felt called to plant in a particular cultural group in a specific language where there's a need and a burden for more gospel-centered churches. Some of those guys strongly felt to what could be called either multiculturalism, or some of the guys even used the language of transculturalism, but different way. And so there was a spread. It's not a big group. There's a group of churches there with Lichpin, between five or six other churches over those years that arose from that. And some of them would be specifically in this language. And remember, South Africa's got 11 official recognized languages in the country. So it is a unique place. So some of those churches would be in a specific language. Some of those churches would be led by, a black pastor, but intentionally trying to do something that is diverse ethnically in the city. Others would be led by a white pastor who's intentionally trying to plant something that is ethnically diverse, and some then would be in between in a mix of saying, I want to plant here in this township area, and that means that the language I'll be speaking will be a specific language. And in our case, we felt a burden really to reach lots of our cultural Christian, really non non-Christian family and friends. And so the best and most effective way to reach them would be in their first language. It's in a, and so, and in that sense, that's how it played out in the Lord's providence. I think the wonderful thing of that is sometimes we can, I think it's Tim Keller that says that, where Paul says that we need to become all things for all people. But I think it's Keller who said, we are called to become all things to all people, but you can't become all things to all people at the very same time. There's a sense whenever you throw the dart on the dartboard, you know, you are...
It's going to land in one spot.
Now, you need wisdom in where you're going to try and throw that dart on the dartboard. But you think that you can throw one dart, whether it's a sermon, whether it's the way that you dress, the music that you choose, the food that you're going to eat, the whatever you do, and you're going to hit everyone everywhere. And that's only not only if you think in terms of categories of ethnicity or language, you know, in terms of also, you know, the social demographics of the there's so many different variables there. And so, yeah, so in a sense, I slightly lost my train of thought now, but that's in a sense that's how the Lord has brought things about. And, and so it is wonderful to not feel the weight and the burden thinking, oh, our church needs to be everything and do everything. Because obviously we're not going to be an island on our own. We're part of a bigger body of Christ. And how can we serve and bless and partner with others and collectively in a place like Pretoria, South Africa, indeed the whole world? How can we be the Philippians 3:10 manifold wisdom of God as the greater partnering churches together? And it's that's in a sense part of our conviction and our story.
So one thing you've done that when I was over there with you guys and doing some speaking and training, mm-hmm. I remember gathering in the union offices, and you guys all, each church sort of had a different little office space there, and collectively sort of trying to share space, share resources, encourage one another. What have you defined for the union churches, the ones you're connected with, as here's what's sort of central and what we all share, and then here's what's differentiated, what each person sort of decides?
Yeah, so one of the things that we do, we still do it to this day, is that we share an office space. Now, some of those churches, because life happens and they grow, and some of them, there's not enough space for them, and others also slightly want to have their own identity more, you know, so it's not, all of the churches aren't exactly the same as, say, 10 years ago. But we share an office space. We currently have four or five different churches in the one office space and one student ministry. It's actually an American student ministry. I think it's called Campus Outreach. Mm-hmm. And their student group that are based in Pretoria also have a space with us. And they're there. And so it's a wonderful, easy way for us locally in our city to see each other, to share the coffee station, often be able to just connect how you're doing and rub shoulders. It's a wonderful way for our church, that is one of the bigger churches in this family of churches, to bless others, because many of the churches don't have the financial ability or the resources to necessarily have lots of the facilities. So we've got a big old now, we have a big old manse, I don't know what you call it in English. It was an old pastor's house that we share, and it's got 9 or 10 different rooms and a few different boardrooms in there, and we connect in that way. And so we have meals together once a quarter with all the churches together. There's lots of informal time spent together because we're there together, and so we see each other. It's wonderful to be there on a day where all the guys are together. There's lots of energy and diversity in that we enjoy. We're not a formal network. We refer to the union as friends in relational proximity. Mm. And we really, it takes weight off of us. Now, we could probably, if we were to go more formal, we could probably achieve more. But this keeps it quite healthy, being friends in relational proximity. There's the union churches, and then there's an outer ring of what we call the friends of the union. And some of them sometimes would be there, and we would do things together. Because some of those churches aren't necessarily daughter churches, become sort of granddaughter churches, churches planted by some of those churches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell I don't us, know if that answers your question, but yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Tell us what's your burden right now for your church and then for the broader movement in South Africa. So if you're saying, like, I know you're here on sabbatical, you're sort of, you know, get sort of envisioning the next season of ministry. You've been at it 14 years and sort of the classic window for sabbatical is sort of a 7-year window. So there's a sense in which right now you get to look back and look forward. What do you feel like is your burden for your church and for the broader work of God where you are?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of at least our burden, it might be exactly the same then for what we hope to see in the country in large. But I mentioned to you just before we started our conversation that we just redefined or reshaped our churches. I don't know what the language would be that you would use here. Some churches would talk about the vision of the church, or we prefer the language of calling. I think that's a bit more of a sort of a biblical word often. It's less of a corporate sort of business word.
Yeah.
The idea of that the Lord has called us, and he clearly calls not only individuals, but he calls the church. And so we've redefined and re-articulated our calling. And part of the reason why we did is precisely to answer the question that you're asking, is because it felt to us, so our whole calling has really been reshaped around 1 Peter. You know, the classic verses in 1 Peter 2 verse, what was it, 9 to 11. The idea that, you know, it's the idea that we are really strangers and aliens in this world. We find ourselves now, if you use the categories of the Old Testament story, really in the desert. We're not in the promised land. We've been rescued and redeemed out of Egypt, but we are strangers and aliens in this world, called out of the darkness into the light, and called for a very specific understanding of both who we are and what we need to do. And the reason why I start there is because that's honestly the answer and the hope and the dream and the burden for us as a church at the moment. Very similar to America, almost exactly the same. We are in a season where we have our national elections in 2 months from now. And it's in a country where politically it is, it's a mess. Don't know if that's the case for America.
No, it's definitely, yeah,
oh,
it's okay.
Is it?
You
okay, I didn't know that. but it's politically a mess. There's a lot of angst. There's lots of different voices. And there's, again, the pendulum is moving from life right to left, often as it does falling off of the horse, trying to push back at whatever injustice is here, and then we fall off of the horse on the other side. And that is South Africa. And in that space, the church, Christians are confused of what does it mean to be a Christian? What does it mean to be the church? What ought we to do? And so that is a big burden for us, even in the next 2 months and in this year. Everything that we're preaching through, thinking through, applying, shaping everything that we do is really trying to do it in light of this calling. And so the idea of seeing ourselves as a people that firstly know who our God is, really having clarity of who we are, and that is really this idea that we are strangers and exiles, and really believing that. I mean, it's all over the New Testament. We don't want to believe that often, but we think that that's what we need as a church, and that is what our country needs, is Christians need to embrace their exile. Not bunker down, but also not live in some idealistic utopia of we're gonna sort of change the world. There's a uniqueness of being a citizen of heaven, even though we are citizens of a nation. And there's a unique calling for a church being a church on the margins, that keeps us, again, from the extremes. And that's a big burden for us, to really embrace knowing who our God is, knowing who we are, knowing where we are, and that is in this sort of exile desert world, that is the categories that the New Testament would describe the church in, and it's everywhere. Knowing where we are and knowing, okay, but what are we called to here then? If this is the world, if we are aliens and strangers here in this in exile, in this desert space, Hebrews chapter 3, okay, what are we as the church called? What does it look like for us to live as ambassadors and churches being embassies here in this world? And so that's a big burden for us at the moment. We feel that that will help our people both missionally, but it will help our people not to go insane, not to get caught up in the political rhetoric, It will anchor them to live a holy, a other life in this world, that is not pessimistic or idealistic. Yeah. So yeah, that's the space that we're in, and that's my prayer for our church and really for the church in South Africa. You know, that's I think what we need.
That's good. There's a lot of similarities to the North American context in that regard.
Yeah.
Well, Yuan, thanks for the time to just sit and talk with you. I'm really blessed by your friendship, and our church is really blessed to be able to be a part of what God's doing in South Africa. So it's a joy to just sort of get some time to hear your story and to hopefully let some other people into the work that God's doing there.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. And I said it in the beginning of the previous podcast is that honestly, Coram Deo has been an immense blessing to our church already, not only our leadership, not only in the material, but in the way that you guys have been partnering with many of these other sort of union churches and these other churches that aren't as privileged as Lichtpunt is. It has been a blessing. There's actually, and this is not an over-exaggeration, the three other churches that Coram Deo has been supporting over the last 2 years, if it wasn't for the support of Coram Deo, those three churches wouldn't have made 2023. Mm. It was that kind of answer from the Lord. And so we thank the Lord for you. It is so encouraging. Dala sends an email to us, it feels like every quarter, saying, what can we pray for, and specifically for both Lichtpunt and for these other churches? And even that, it gives us energy and perspective and new life to know that on the other side of the pond, there's a church really praying for us, thinking of us, knowing the stories. And so thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well, and one of the creative things you did that I really appreciate, I didn't realize this until I went to South Africa, but it's a long way from the United States. It's, you know, it's the other hemisphere and sort of the other side of the world. And so it takes a long time to get things shipped there. And so you guys basically said, hey, this gospel-centered life material, can we just publish that in South Africa? And you worked it out with the publisher to basically make that work so that you guys can just like print it and distribute it within the country there, which is a really a beautiful thing, but also I thought was sort of a way of saying, how can we, instead of letting this be a thing that gets shipped to us from North America, how can we take responsibility and ownership for how we can be part of the vehicle of getting some of this material in the hands of other pastors and Christians throughout South Africa. So that was a real blessing to me to have you guys say like, hey, we like this, but it's a bummer to wait 2 months for it to show up on a boat.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's both the timing, but also the cost, you know, print and sell those or give those even at a way better price, you know, if we could do it locally.
Yeah. We like those tariffs in North America. So we like to make you pay more for things that we ship. Yeah, I don't know why. That's a Trump Biden problem. Okay, so someone needs to solve that. But
I've never, who's Trump? Who's Biden? I didn't know those names.
You don't even know who we're talking about, do you? Well, listeners, thanks for engaging with this story. And I hope this helps to give you some vision for church planting, what God's doing around the world. A culture that's similar to in some ways and quite different from in some ways, the United States of America. And just to be encouraged that in the same way that we're trying to ask, how does the evangel, how does the gospel lie at the center of the scriptures and at the center of the church? Those same questions are getting asked and applied in other places in ways that bring glory to Jesus, in ways that that lead people to faith in Christ and lead them to be disciples. And so, God, we're blessed by your work. And pray that
thank
Lord
you.
Gives you grace to keep doing it.
Thanks, Bob.
Well, the goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. And so if you're a Christian or a church leader who's listening in another context, as always, thanks for listening in. And we hope this blesses you and helps you apply the gospel in your own context. We always love hearing from listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cbomaha.com. And we look forward to seeing you again next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.